Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
We have with us today a return visit, and it's much too late. You should have been back much earlier, Robert Stallman, flutist extraordinaire.
Oh, Jill, thank you. I'm so happy to be back here and to see you again. And
well, it's long delayed, and of course, you are a very, very busy man. Not only are you a virtuoso flutist, but you are also now an arranger, an orchestrator, reconstructor of great music. How about that?
Yes, I started dabbling in this about 20 some years ago, and now I guess I'm taking it seriously. I've done quite a bit, mainly with Mozart and Schubert, but also a number of works of Beethoven and Dvorak and lots of Bach, of course, because that's a given.
Well, yes, it is a given, but mm-hmm. you really are taking it on full force. I mean, you have contributed to the repertoire through the years in terms of, I guess you would call it transcribing things for flute, is that it?
The transcriptions, but I prefer to call at least these Mozart and Schubert transcriptions, some of which we may play for our listeners, for your listeners.
Yes, of course.
Recreations.
Not reconstructions.
I also call them transgressions sometimes, but they're really recreations because I try to get into the imaginary brain of Mozart or Schubert to second guess what he might have done had he been asked to or commissioned to arrange one of his piano sonatas for string quartet or one of his forehand sonatas in the case of the CD,
which you
just heard a bit of, for string quintet or flute and strings. They work both ways, either for flute, violin, two violas, cello, or as a string quintet with two violins, two violas, and cello.
And, of course, what we're talking about is the newest release. Well, it's been out now for, what, about a year?
Well, officially it came out in October. But it was actually pressed last December in time for a concert I gave in Vienna at the Schubert Saal of five of these transcriptions. I played with the Martinu Quartet, who are on this very recording you have here, and a violist from Prague named Karl Untermüller. So they came up from Prague to Vienna, and we rehearsed, and we'd recorded a number of these pieces already, so we put it on there, and we had enormous success. And I thought, you know, to play Mozart in a recreation in Vienna was a little bit cheeky of me.
Yeah, well,
but it went very well. So I was not exactly the most relaxed for the first 5 minutes playing there. But afterwards,
well, you have a lot of critics there.
Well, exactly. Yes. Vienna is very conservative about this. I mean,
yes, possessive in the sense,
very
I guess.
Very protective
yes.
of their Schubert
right,
and their Mozart.
Right, right. But again, I think as an instrumentalist, and I say this for all instrumentalists, we all come across a period where we say, this was not written for the instrument, and this doesn't lay well, and we really ought to redo this.
Exactly right. That's exactly how I felt about many of these works. That, for example, the F major sonata for four hands, which is Kirchhoff 497, which is considered by all serious Mozartians as his greatest composition for piano, aside from the concertos,
yes,
for piano without orchestra. It's the pinnacle of Mozart's achievement. It has this introductory adagio, very serious, and then it goes to music that's straight out of Figaro, because it comes from the time of Figaro.
When he wrote that.
It was 3 months before he'd finished Figaro, and he wrote this piece.
I am speechless, and I think the music speaks for itself. There is such a difference in the depth of sound, of the expression, of the seriousness, of the gravity of what it is. It's not heavy. It's not boring. It sings. And of course, it's beautifully played. And not because you're here, but I'm sure that Mozart, if he were up there somewhere, he would say, you know, good job, Bob.
Well, I love to.
Really? When did you
dream that way.
When did you fall in love with Mozart? When did you decide you were going to really take this daring?
I've always been in love with Mozart since I began music at age 10. Mozart, maybe any musician, Mozart, as you know, is
yes, but
paramount. But
look at this. I mean, this is very daring on your part. I mean, you're really taking something.
I was considered foolish and foolhardy when I started doing this. It's very risky to do this kind of thing, but I did get early encouragement from very important musicians whom I totally respect. One was Richard Good,
yes,
Ken Noda, has been for years assistant to James Levine at the Met.
Yes.
A very fine pianist, a wonderful musician. Mm-hmm. He just wrote me, well, I had sent him a CD about a year ago, and he sent me an email, but it got stuck in draft for a year. So I just, before I left for Europe 3 weeks ago, got this amazing email from him saying that it was like a gift that he'll never forget. It was the happiest gift he's ever received. And he said, this is so much better than the original. He couldn't believe it. He said, it's the best version you could possibly imagine of Mozart's original, which I thought was the highest possible compliment.
Well, what I think is it would become far more popular, the work, if it is played as a quintet. That's my opinion.
And the first three copies that we ever sold from our company, Bogner's Cafe, were to musicians at Marlboro, probably through Richard Good's influence, because he really believes this recording. People there listened to it, and I think there's some feeling that it really should at some point enter the mainstream repertoire.
I would think, because even if you're a purist, you have to admit that there is a very different sound. The voices that are singing.
It's the voices.
And it's the instrumentation.
Yeah. Well, now, you're a musician, so you know this, but Mozart thought in musical characters, he was an opera. Even when he was writing sacred music, he was an opera. We all know that. Everything was opera. Everything was characters. There's the Count. There's Susanna. So this is true in the chamber music. But you're not going to hear that in a piano version unless you have a very strong imagination. It's all homogenized. And also it's very blurry in the middle range where the violas had wonderful parts.
But also the voice, the singing of the melody, the lyricism that you get in the flute. I mean,
the greatest pianist can only approximate the voice.
Yes, and of course you have to also think about what was the reason that he wrote this altogether. Was it just inspiration, or did he decide he wanted to write something, as you say, for someone to play with? I mean, that was a whole other thing, the limitations of what the commission was, as it were.
Well, we know that Mozart himself transcribed some of his own works. I mean, the two famous cases that come to mind are the string quintet in C minor, which originally was a serenade in C minor for winds. So he reduced it from, I think, 8 parts to 5 and made it for strings. Now, the other one is the fugue, also in C minor, originally for four-hand piano, became a string quartet.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that. Now, had Mozart lived to a ripe old age of, let's say, 50, he may have been asked to write more quintets. He may have just drawn on these. He may very well have, who knows, but
sketches,
he could have arranged them. Maybe far better than what I did, but I made an approximation of what, as near as I could make to what Mozart
would have
done.
You are being commercially modest. Let's put it that way.
Well, you're very nice.
You are being humble, and that's the right thing to do.
But
I really have to say that the music does speak for itself. This is
I'm very happy you like it.
I mean, it's an amazing demonstration of what can be done. In a sense, sometimes the music demands a certain instrumentation. And probably whatever he was creating in his mind, as you say, was for five voices.
I think it was, and I think he was asked to write a piano sonata for four hands. Very likely, we know, in fact, the quintet, well, the sonata for four hands in C major, which is the first work on this CD, was, in fact, written for a party at his friend, the Baron von Jacquin, the famous botanist, very, very close friend of Mozart's, who had a lovely house with a garden, and in the warm summer months, there were always weekend Sunday concerts. And he often asked Mozart to bring a new piece. Well, he had asked Mozart, in the case of this other sonata, K521 in C major, write something for my sister, Franziska, who was a student, a very gifted student of Mozart's. And It was either a week later or 2 weeks later, there was this garden party. He sends the music off to the Baron, to his friend, with a note. And the note said, give this immediately to Franziska, for it is a bit difficult.
Yeah. He used to do that.
This also may have been a quintet in his mind, but he had the reason to write for this purpose, a garden party with another pianist, his student.
Now, you are extremely erudite, and I mean, you are a very, very fine musician. You have heard this through many, many years, but you go way beyond that. And I wonder what background did you have in terms of knowing so much about the composers that you are working with? Was this just a labor of love, or was this something that you absorbed?
I always thought that every musician would be they have the same interest that I've had, which is to know the lives of the great musicians. I mean, you can't know them all, but the ones you love, like Schubert and Mozart and Beethoven and you know, Dvorak, these people who, for me, are very central, and that you'd read their letters and know some of the basic facts about how they lived, who they knew.
Well, it's a deep, deep love for what you're doing.
But I want to tell you something. I just came back from Vienna, and I have very dear friends there, and I was working with this fabulous quartet called the Artis, A-R-T-I-S quartet. They have about 30 CDs out on Sony and Nimbus and other labels. And we are now starting to work to record these Mozart translations of mine. And so I'm very excited because they're wonderful. I was with other musicians from the Vienna Symphony, not the Philharmonic, but the number 2 orchestra, which is mm-hmm. actually just as good, sometimes better. And I went to the concert, and afterwards we had an opera concert, bite and drink, and we were walking I said, well, let's just go to the Fraunhuber Cafe. It was Mozart's cafe. They said, oh? I said, yeah, you know, he just died around the corner, you know, and they said, oh? Uh-huh. Now here I am, an American musician, with the flute section of the Vienna Symphoniker. And these people, my
don't
friends,
know about.
I was privately shocked that they never had seen the plaque in the space. This is the house where Mozart died on Hohensteingasse, around the corner from Kärntnerstrasse in Vienna. And of course, it's now, I mean, the original house was destroyed. Then the secondary house was bombed in the war. But the original plaque is there on a glass front of a department store, a hideous department store. But I said, if you look up to that window, that's the room where Mozart died in. He died in that window there, and he looked out down this alleyway. This is his view. And they said, Bob, you know so much. I said, I don't know anything. I'm like, this is the basics. I mean,
well,
if
you
love Mozart, you know this, don't you?
It's kind of like living in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
living in the historic area,
yeah.
And people don't know.
Yeah, this is where Ben Franklin.
That's right, exactly.
Went to a tavern
no kidding! Is that where they signed that document? It's that
it's
kind
like
of
that.
Thing. It really is. But you have again. What I wanted to say is, and I hope that any musicians who are listening won't be too offended. Musicians are notoriously single-minded. They really are. When they're doing their work, it's the job that matters. It's playing it that matters. It's the technique that matters. And it's kind of, this is what has to be done. And of course, you can't live that way as an artist because you must feel and you must appreciate the creative process of what you're, the composer of the music
yes,
that you're playing.
Yes, we're much too narrow focused. And this is our conservatory training.
Unfortunately. Until later do they begin to appreciate that there's a world out there. I really say
this
that.
This is a topic for our next interview,
yes,
maybe. But yeah. So, yes, I've always been fascinated by Mozart. Even as a 10-year-old, I was reading about him. And
but also your harmonic, your understanding of the construction of the music. That's what I really was getting to as well.
Well, I just dove in 20 years ago, I guess it was now. It was on a dare. I'll try to be brief. It was on a dare from a violist who said to me that these transcriptions by Franz Anton Hofmeister, Mozart's friend and Masonic friend, also he lent a lot of money to Mozart several times, but he was his publisher. And so after Mozart's death, he put out four sonata transcriptions for quartet, for flute, violin, violoncello have appeared. And they're a bit clumsy. And I didn't really realize that until I was rehearsing one of these.
Well, see, that's the other thing. You play an instrument mm-hmm. where you have enormous repertoire. I mean, it's just It's bottomless.
But not an enormous amount of really great repertoire.
But you have
quantities we have. Yes,
the flute. Yes. It's a melodic. I mean, it's the melody instrument. It is the instrument that is in everything. Really?
Yes.
And I speak to you as an artist.
Yes, that's true.
A lot. But no, you are. So what happens is you are studying and you are learning enormous amounts of music. Mm. But still, I mean, you as a musician, beyond that, you really do understand the construction of the music. And I think this is where a lot of this comes in. And I was just wondering, was that something that you got in conservatory or was this something that you just kind of...
I guess I have to say it's a natural curiosity of mine.
Okay. And they
always assume that everybody had this curiosity, but it's not true, unfortunately.
No, it isn't.
I find it fascinating to study these things.
And the enthusiasm that you have about it and the love of it, which I think permeates everything that you do. And that's one of the things that one feels when one just talks to you, because you are kind of brimming over with information and also the joy of knowing it and also of dealing with it. And that's what you feel definitely, Bob. I mean, it's an amazing thing to see in this day and age where people are very casual and they're kind of blasé about what they do. This is your label, is that right?
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, our new label, our new CD label, is all about chamber music. And the name Bogner's Cafe has a story attached to it. Bogner's Cafe is an actual physical place in Vienna where Mozart played billiards, but more recently, shall I say, Schubert, 20 years after Mozart, hung out. It was his hangout on a daily basis. Sometimes he was there twice a day. Usually in the afternoon, he was there to smoke a pipe, have a glass of punch or beer, and read the paper and meet with his intellectual circle, an artistic circle of friends. Then after dinner, he would come back with his friends, his circle of friends, Schwind and Schober and Bauernfeld and all the ones you read about who left wonderful anecdotes about Schubert's life. And they talk about Bogner's Cafe. Now, of course, the word Bogner, B-O-G-N-E-R in German means archer. A bog is a bow. Or it means a bow person, a bowman, like a violinist.
But
it's just a coincidence. Now, Carl Bogner ran the cafe, and Schubert, of course, usually had no money, so he ran up an account there. And there's a wonderful story that all his friends were in debt to Bogner, and to the point where Bogner said, "Listen, you know, it's been 3 months, and I have no penny for you folks." So Moritz von Schwind, the famous Viennese painter, he became famous later, said, "Oh, don't worry, Mr. Bogner, I will paint your doors for you." So he paints two Turkish men on these Gothic-shaped doors, and we have a sketch of that. We know what it looked like. And I'm guessing that he put the menu right on the bellies of these Turks, you know, on the front of the door.
Right.
And, of course, now, after about 1961 or 2 or 3, we're not sure exactly when, but in the early 60s, it no longer was a cafe.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a cafe for about at least two centuries, and it became a furniture store called Stiel. And now it's a pet store. You walk in, you do not smell coffee.
Well,
you know? But it's a place. And the idea of the company is this is a virtual space where we have a community of music lovers of souls mm-hmm. who want to come into this small space and listen to great music, chamber music. Because of the space. And this was, of course, a tradition throughout Europe, in Leipzig, in Vienna, in London later, and in Paris and other places, that you went to the coffee house for good music. So that's the raison d'être of the name, Bogner's Cafe.
Bogner's Cafe. So that is the label. Now,
right.
if one wanted to get this newest album.
Right. The website is still not completed, but what you should do is go right to Amazon.com and type in Mozart Stallman or just Robert Stallman Flute, and you'll get all the information and how to purchase it. And I think it takes 2 days or something to... They say 2 or 3 days to get it in the mail. You also can go to a distribution channel called CDBaby.com.
Okay.
And that's also very good. And eventually we'll have other ways. There's Archive, but we don't have that yet. Once we have 2 or 3 CDs, within this year we should have 3 CDs, then we'll be able to expand to other distribution.
But you've had an amazing response to this.
We've had very, very good response to this first one. So far, we know that at least 80, 82 radio stations across the nation have picked it up. The NPR and Minnesota Public Radio has picked it up on their syndicated stations, and Weekend Edition is about to use it.
Oh, that's exciting.
So we're thrilled that it's being heard by millions of people, apparently.
And it's just the first of many, I guess.
We hope.
Yes.
We expect.
Now, just a quickie, how do you manage to do everything?
Well, my wife Hannah is in charge of this company, and sometimes it's a bit much for her because she's like many of us at our middle age. Let's call it we're
tired.
Coping. No, it's not that. We're coping with the computer and all that.
Okay.
And it's a curve that she's learned how to deal with, but. You know, there are times when it's challenging.
But you are performing.
Yeah, I'm just came back from Europe. I'm going back I'm recording, first of all, I'm recording the Hungarian Dances of Brahms with piano outside of Boston in May. I'm doing that now because they're being published by Kalmus. All this stuff is being published.
Are
slowly.
These transcriptions of yours?
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
So,
what else?
Almost everything I do is a transcription because I've got stacks of it. But I'm with Doblinger Verlag in Vienna, which is a big honor because I'm American. And it was established
yes,
in 1817. And they're putting out some of these Mozart and Schubert transcriptions for quartet, for flute and strings, and also international music. And recently, I've done a whole slew for the last 2 years with Kalmus.
So you're mainly doing recordings. Is that right?
Yeah. And as I record, I have to include some of the works that I've just published because it's a danger to publish something and have somebody else preempt it,
So, yeah. So you're doing that, but in terms of actual recital work, that's.
Yeah.
That's,
well, I perform over in Vienna now and Prague and Paris and in the States. I get to go to good places.
You get to go to good places and give us the most wonderful, wonderful new visions of works that have been repertoire in a different way for so many years. Thank you. This has been an interview with the irresistible Robert Stallman. You are really, your enthusiasm and infectious, and I really hope that we can have much, much more coming from your Bogner's Cafe label.
Thank you so much, Jill. It's just been a great pleasure to be here with you.